ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Vishnupadaya Krishnapastaya Buddhale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasvata Deva Gauravani Pracharane Nirvasesha Shunyavani Paschachadesha Tadane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasani Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 29, Verse 23. Dveshata parakaye mam mani no binna darshana bhute shubhada virasya namana shanti mrityati dveshata parakaye mam mani no binda darshanaha bhute shu bada virasya namana shanti murchati. Dvishata, of one who is envious, parakaye, towards the body of another, mam, unto me, manina, offering respect. Binna darshina, of a separatist. Bhuteshu, towards living entities. Buddha vairasya, of one who is inimical. Na, not. Mana, the mind. Shantim, peace. Richati, attains. Translation, one who offers me respect but is envious of the bodies of others and is therefore a separatist never attains peace of mind because of his inimical behavior towards other living entities. Purport in this verse, the two phrases, bhuteshu badavairasya and dvishata parakaye, are significant. One who is envious of or inimical towards others never experiences any happiness. A devotee's vision, therefore, must be perfect. He should ignore bodily distinctions and see only the presence of the part and parcel of the Supreme Lord and the Lord Himself in His plenary expansion as Supersoul. That is the vision of a pure devotee. The bodily expression of a particular type of living entity is always ignored by the devotee. It is expressed herein that the Lord is always eager to deliver the conditioned souls who have been encaged within material bodies. Devotees are expected to carry the message or desire of the Lord to such conditioned souls and enlighten them with Krishna consciousness. Thus they may be elevated to transcendental spiritual life and the mission of their lives will be successful. Of course, this is not possible for living entities who are lower than human beings. But in human society, it is feasible that all living entities can be enlightened with Krishna consciousness. Even living entities who are lower than humans can be raised to Krishna consciousness by other methods. For example, Shivananda Sena, a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya, delivered a dog by feeding him prasad, distribution of prasad or remnants of the foodstuffs offered to the Lord, even to the ignorant masses of people and to animals, gives such living entities the chance for elevation to Krishna consciousness. Factually, it happened that the same dog, when met by Lord Chaitanya at Puri, was liberated from the material condition. It is especially mentioned here that a devotee must be free from all violence. Lord Chaitanya has recommended that a devotee not commit violence to any living entity. Sometimes, the question is raised that since vegetables also have life and devotees take vegetable foodstuff, isn't that violence? Firstly, however, taking some leaves, twigs, or fruit from a tree or a plant does not kill the plant. Besides that, jiva himsa means that since every living entity has to pass through a particular type of body according to his past karma, although every living entity is eternal, he should not be disturbed in his gradual evolution. A devotee has to execute the principles of devotional service exactly as they are, and he must know that however insignificant a living entity may be, the Lord is present within him. A devotee must realize this universal presence of the Lord. Translation: one who offers me respect but is envious of the bodies of others and is therefore a separatist never attains peace of mind because of his inimical behavior towards other living entities. So this is another in the series of verses talking about how we have to see the presence of the Lord everywhere, not just in the deity form. And consequently, we have to look at other living entities as representatives of the Lord. And here it says, don't hate them in any way. And I don't have envy of them, simply because they have a different type of body. And he uses the word also, binna darshana, which means to see differences. Or as Prabhupada says here, a separatist. So we think in terms of me being one person and that body being something else, different from me. So we know from Bhagavad Gita also that one of the impulses of the jiva in the material world under illusion is, well, actually two things, ichcha and dvesha. Desire and hatred. These are the two impulses of a living entity in the material world. A desire is manifested as desire for getting some enjoyment for my body and my senses. And dvesha means to hate anything that interrupts that enjoyment. So basically, ultimately, enjoyment is the main factor, and the dvesha is a byproduct of that, because we get some obstacle to our enjoyment, so we begin to hate that thing or living entity or whatever. And these are the guiding principles of a person in the material world. In fact, in our daily life, we do all of our activities based on that. We do things to get things we want, and we do other activities to avoid the things we don't want. So our whole life is guided by ichcha and dvesha. Here in this verse where it talks about being envious of other living entities. So, ultimately, because we desire things for ourselves, we have to take from somebody else. So we automatically have some sort of dvesha, because nothing is free in this world. We have to take it, and somebody's going to protest somewhere along the line. So that produces some sort of obstacle to us and some opposition, and consequently some dvesha, some hatred or envy or whatever. So this is an impossible situation in the material world. We automatically create some enmity by our very existence and our activities in this world, even the activities for survival. So as the Bhagavatam says, the nature of the material world is one living entity lives off another, ultimately. So automatically we have to have dvesha. Somebody's going to hate us because they're going to get killed for our survival. So we minimize that, of course, by taking the plant life more than, rather than the animal life. And then even that is also the sin or the violence is mitigated by offering it with devotion to the Lord, and then it becomes prasadam. So we have a way in which we can get rid of that, the sin caused by the violence. So in any case, the whole of the Vedic system is based on the Karma Kanda section, at least, or the Karma Yoga section, is based on the idea of avoiding sin and doing punyas. That is avoiding violence, because sin basically means violence towards other living entities of different sorts. So we avoid the sin, and we try to do the opposite, do punyas. Now, of course, we can't avoid sin ultimately because we have to support our body, but we compensate that sin by doing the pious activities. Or if we do some forbidden activities, we also have to compensate, you know, some extreme sins, then we have to do some atonement or prayashchitta in terms of some sort of punya as well. So we compensate the existence in the material world and then our criminal sinful acts by the punyas. We balance ourselves out that way. And that way, we can at least live a rather relatively peaceful life without too much struggle and too much pain. So that is the solution to the problem through karma yoga. We avoid the sin, we do the pious activity. This ultimately leads us up to sattva gun, and in that sattva gun we're peaceful and we minimize our material needs. So it's a rather preferable existence to living in rajagun and tamagun. Nevertheless, we have a body, we also must commit sin ultimately either, and we can never completely disdo punyas and have no sins. So accidentally we may commit sinful activities, etc. So we're still bound to the material world even in sattva, and even if we maximize the punyas and avoid the sins. In any case, there's emphasis on doing the punyas and avoiding the sinful activities. In bhakti, of course, through the process of bhakti, we have the opportunity of destroying all karmas, all the sinful karmas at the present which we're doing, plus all the past ones which are waiting for us for future lifetimes. These are called the aparabdha karmas. All those are also destroyed. And it's not such a difficult process. So that even if we accidentally chant the name of the Lord, we can destroy all of our karmas, past, present, future, very, very easily, as Ajibil did when he named his son Narayana, and suddenly all of his karmas were gone. So what to speak of chanting with devotion? So therefore the aspect of karmas, even the punyas and the karmas are destroyed by this process. So we get free of all karmas and we get liberation through that. So in terms of devotional service, destruction of karmas is not such a significant item. And we don't really worry about that. But then we have verses like this, that this whole section actually talking about, well, you have to respect all living entities, you cannot commit violence with other living entities, you should be compassionate with other living entities, etc. It's something like the Christians, they emphasize this a lot, that you know, you have to do good works for other people. And on the other hand, we find Prabhupada discouraging us, oh, we don't involve in charitable activities and opening hall, etc. And that way you can be peaceful. Don't be envious of anyone. Also in the Bhagavata, in the nectar devotion there, the second quality of bhakti is subhada. Creation of auspiciousness. So Rupa Goswami gives there different, what does that subhada mean? So among them we have, of course, good qualities, and so we get wonderful qualities. Another is that we have great respect for all living entities. We show compassion, we're friendly to all living entities. And another one is, of course, all living entities are friendly to us. So these two things go together. And this actually is the main item there, that as a devotee, then we're very compassionate to all living entities. So then it would seem like, okay, so if the more we're advanced we are, the more we should engage in charitable activities and open hospitals and feed poor people and uplift the poor, etc., like the Christians do, and many of the Christians do that. So how is it that we don't do that that activity, that charitable activity? And the answer, of course, is that there's nothing wrong with doing that, but it's more important actually to see the root of the misery of all the living entities. So we trace out suffering in the material world for the human being. Suffering is the end product of karma. And what causes the action to produce that suffering and karma? A sinful act. Why do they commit a sinful act? Because of desire and hatred. That iccha dvesha, because of that. And what is the cause of the iccha and dvesha? And it goes back to ignorance, avidya, ajnana. This is the whole cause of the whole material world, ignorance. So that this is the basis of the problem in the material world, the ignorance. So we can, of course, alleviate the immediate problems of the suffering living entities by giving food or whatever like that, or hospitals or whatever. Huh? And, of course, actually, there are agencies designated to do that, like governments, etc., and hospitals, etc. But more significant, of course, is to get to the root of the problem. The cause of all these desires that cause the karmas which cause the suffering. And if we can cure a person of that, then we have a permanent solution. Whereas just getting rid of the effects is not a real solution at all. So, therefore, the devotee will emphasize or concentrate on the root of the problem, and that is to get rid of that ignorance, the ignorance of the jiva. So, what is the ignorance of the jiva? One, he doesn't know what he is. He thinks he's a material body, and he thinks he has to enjoy, and consequently does all these activities and causes his suffering. So first of all, of course, we have like Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, you're not the body, you're the Atma. So that's one type of knowledge we need. We're not the body at all. This, of course, will automatically arise in sattva, because sat gives rise to jnana. And that jnana is knowledge that I'm not the body, I am Atma. And then consequently we respect scriptures and we accept the conclusion of scriptures. So it's inbuilt into material world that if you progress upwards enough by doing your punyas, and then you get to sattva, then you should begin to realize, I'm not the body. And then we get disinterested in all the material world at that point, and we start going for liberation. But we also know liberation itself is not a real solution to the problem. So getting knowledge of Atma is one thing, and then we also have knowledge of the Supreme Lord. That's the second factor we need. So we have to give people both types of knowledge. You're not the body, you're the soul, or self-realization. And then we have to also give knowledge of God as God-realization. So these are the two types of knowledge we have to give people. Okay? But even to give knowledge like that is like theoretical. You go, okay, you're not the body, you're the soul, and there's a God someplace. Accept it. Tell everyone to accept that. It's not going to solve the problem, practically speaking, is it? So we have to have a process also for realization of all of this. So, of course, you could go to, okay, let's do jnana or yoga, and we can realize Atma. But it's a very complicated, long, drawn-out process, very difficult to do. People are not qualified unless they're already in sattva guna to do these processes. So the only practical solution is to engage everybody in devotion somehow or other. And through that, they can realize that they're not the body, they're the soul, and they can also realize the Supreme Lord. So that is the practical solution for solving people's miseries in this material world. We have to give them the process of devotional service. But we also have, don't preach to the faithless persons. How can we give bhakti to faithless persons and save them? Looks like a contradiction. We can't save anybody because most people in the material world are not faithful at all. They're very opposed to God. So what is the solution? So the preaching for those people is in the form of letting them hear the name or giving them bhakti in which they don't know it's bhakti, like giving them prasadam. So we let them hear the name, we give them prasadam. And if the faithless person continues to do that, eventually they get faith. And that is the power of devotion, that even accidentally accepted, it begins to transform the Atma. And the Atma begins to develop faith. But it takes time. So therefore this indirect method has to be constantly done. And people have to be exposed more and more and more and more and more to this. And so the more they're exposed to it, then the more possibility is that they're eventually going to have faith. So when they get faith, when they're very receptive, then we can start preaching directly to them. Okay, you're not the body, you're the Atman, here's the Supreme Lord here, and we should worship the Lord, etc. So we can start giving the knowledge at that point. So, for all living entities that the devotee shows, rather than simply engaging in material welfare activities. We try to get to the root of the problem.
We don't oppose those activities, but we should understand that those are not the final solution to the problem, that there's a higher solution. So the role of the devotee is to try, because he does understand that higher solution, better to give that higher knowledge than do anything else, and let the other people do these other works or whatever. So this is how the devotee develops or manifests his compassion for all living entities. This is the method the devotee does that. So, therefore, we should not think that the devotees are hard-hearted and they don't care for the suffering of humanity, etc. But the expression that it takes, or the way in which we carry out that, is a little bit different from what other people may think is, you know, charitable activity or whatever. So the devotee understands that all jivas are particles of consciousness, and by nature they are also expansions, or we say part and parcels of the Supreme Lord. They're amsas of the Supreme Lord. And we're not looking at the body, we're looking at the Atma. And in that Atma also then there is the Paramatma, the Supreme Lord. So we do have to give proper respect to all living entities, regardless of their bodies. So this applies not only to the human being, because animals and plants also have souls and also have Paramatma. So we have to give proper respect to them also. So this is, we can say, even a greater vision of compassion than religious movements have, like Christians, because we have to show compassion to the animals and the plants also. I doubt if their compassion really extends that far. They're not talking about, you know, take care of the animals and the plants. They're taking care of the human beings with hospitals and things, but they're not talking about the plants and animals so much. But the Vaishnava sees all living entities as worthy of respect, etc. So therefore we have also in the nectar devotion, we have the 64 angas of bhakti, and the first 20 are the door to bhakti. So within that we have the do nots, the second 10 are don't do this, don't do that, and don't disturb any living entity is one. So it doesn't say don't disturb the human beings, don't disturb the plants and the animals also, don't disturb any living entity. And then in the first 10, the positive ones, there's give respect to the banyan tree or the asvata tree or the cow, or the, so we give respect to the animals and the plants. So this is a very broad conception of compassion. We're respecting all living entities, not just the human being. But then again, we also have levels of respect. It's not that everything is respected equally, but we do respect everything, and therefore we commit minimum of violence in all cases. So even, okay, the plants are less advanced than the human beings, so we can kill the plant and eat it or whatever like that. But even then, we have to minimize that so we don't waste the plants also. In other words, it's a sin to waste the food and to over-harvest or whatever, and just waste all that. That's all sinful as well. So we have, but then again, there's levels. So the higher the consciousness again, the more respect we have to give. And so when we come to the human being, obviously, there's very great severe penalties for violence to the human being as compared to the animals or the plants. And then it goes higher than that. Among human beings, we have different levels also. So in the Varnashram society, the Brahman was at the top. And a sin against the Brahman was the worst thing. Yeah, any human being, of course, the sin is there. But if you commit sin against the Brahmana or violence against the Brahmana, that is worse than anything else. But then we go higher than that, and then there's the sin against the Vaishnava. That's the Vaishnava aparad. That's even worse. So according to the living entity and according to the human being, then there is severity of sin and also the grades of respect. So therefore we have to give the most respect to the Vaishnava of all the human beings. And the worst sin is to commit violence against the Vaishnava. So that's why we say that Vaishnava aparad is the worst thing. We have the difference between aparad and sin is simply the fact that the aparad involves the devotee or Krishna or bhakti, whereas sin is other living entities, other things, not to do with devotion at all. But when it's violence against the Lord, violence against the devotees, then it becomes aparad. So that's even worse. It's a sin, of course, but it's the worst sin. Because not only it affects your, causes you bad karma, so to speak, but also it can destroy your bhakti. That's even worse. And so if a devotee commits a sinful activity, that's not so bad. And even Krishna accepts that. And he says, even if you commit the most sinful activity, you're still my devotee. So he doesn't give too much regard for the sins, because we are in the material world and we do have anartas, etc., whatever. But he doesn't tolerate the aparad against the Vaishnava. That's very serious. So the normal sin is not a problem. The offense against the devotee is the worst type of sin, and that causes serious effects. That is, bhakti begins to decrease or can get destroyed as a result. So for the devotee, that's the worst violence, or dvesha, dvesha against the Vaishnava. That's very serious. Still, though we do have the grades, that we respect all the living entities, from the smallest living entity to the most important living entity, like that. But of all those, we give greatest respect to the Vaishnavas. They are then the highest position of all. So there's also apart from simply respecting them as living entities, we respect the Vaishnava because his consciousness is at the highest level. Of course, we respect the animals more than the plants and the human being more than the animals because their consciousness is higher. But the consciousness as a human being of the Vaishnava is the highest of all because he has got faith and he accepts the existence of Supreme Lord. So that's the ultimate consciousness for the human being. So that is why he's given the greatest respect. But there's an extra advantage, and that is, through that respect, we get mercy from the Vaishnava. And it's through mercy that we can advance. By the mercy of Vaishnavas, we get bhakti, or we even get faith by the mercy of Vaishnavas. And by the mercy of Vaishnavas, we can develop our bhakti. So the respect for the Vaishnava is instrumental in our devotional development. So that is why we emphasize so much this aspect of respecting the devotees of the Lord, because this is the source of our advancement in Krishna consciousness. So, therefore, we never disrespect any living entity, but we do have gradations of respect, and ultimately we give the most respect to the devotee of the Supreme Lord as the, medium for Krishna's mercy to manifest in the material world. We act as instruments also, and then we give up the mercy to other living entities as well. We show respect to the Vaishnavas, we get their mercy, and then we distribute that mercy to other persons. So what is that mercy? That mercy is bhakti. The knowledge of bhakti, that is what we give to other persons. Inspiration to follow the process of bhakti. So that is how the Vaishnava in his highest activities shows his compassion to other living entities. Of course, we can also combine the normal compassion of charity works, etc., with the bhakti, as long as it's not distracting and it has a Krishna conscious element. So we can distribute prasadam to others and no problem, because through that people get spiritual benefit. And it's our way in which we can indirectly give compassion to people that don't have faith. So that's a very convenient way of showing, helping people. And it combines the two processes of charity work with Vaishnava compassion. In this way we can adopt certain aspects of charity in a Krishna conscious way. And we get double effects from that. People get material benefits, plus they get the spiritual benefit as well. So this is how this is our conception of compassion as compared to others. So, therefore, we should never consider that respect for other living entities is not an aspect of the Vaishnava Dharma. And then we only look at devotees. Yeah, we have compassion, but it is a little bit different. We emphasize the aspect of the higher aspect of compassion, getting to the root of the problem and giving them bhakti, rather than emphasizing only the other aspect, that is the material aspect. So that's a matter of prominence, in other words, that we emphasize this aspect. Okay, any question?
Lord Krishna said the same thing, Pandita Sandarshina.
So that of course is on the level of more or less on jnana. He's talking about, okay, we should see every living entity as equal, etc. The elephant and the dog and the dog eater and the brahmana. So we're not looking at the bodies and we respect. But then you'll see that within the Varnashram system, which is also the order of the Lord, you have to give most respect to the brahmanas, etc. And this whole story about Nriga, and he disrespected the brahmana, got cursed, and then he became a lizard, etc. like that. And there's a whole section there about how to respect the brahmanas, and at the end of that chapter even. We show everybody's equal, but at the same time in the Varnashram system, give more respect to the brahmanas. So there's levels there also. But the idea, of course, of even for the brahmana is a warning, that instruction is that he shouldn't have prejudice against the dog eater or the animals, etc. He should have proper respect for them also, and he can't exploit those. So it's because of the exploitation that the caste system got some sort of bad name in the modern world, that the upper castes were exploiting the lower castes for the wrong reasons. So they didn't have this vision of everybody as dog and dog eater and Brahman are all jivas. They had a different type of vision, and they were exploiting the lower people for their purposes. So that's why that is a good reminder to everybody, that we have to see not the bodies, but we see the soul and paramatma within all the individuals.
Many times we have difference of opinion with some other devotees, and we express that difference of opinion to them.
Mm-hmm.
What is the threshold when that becomes an aprāda, or that remains or that remains as a difference of opinion, and we express our
Even acharyas have difference of opinions. Baladev may have a different version of the verse from meaning of the verse from Vishvanatha Chakravarti, for instance, or Jiva Goswami may have a different version from someone else like this. So it's not the difference is not the aparad. The aparad actually is hostile feelings. Yeah, that's the problem.
Do something bad for that person.
Yeah, or even the feeling, and then we may express it in thoughts, then we express it in words, and then we express it in action. So, yeah, of course, the apparatus of Vaishnava Ninda, which is technically criticism, which is verbal, but it could be action, or just the mentality itself is not favorable to have undue or unreasonable, irrational hatred or dislike of other Vaishnavas. But we do have to make distinctions as well, and therefore it was also said that, well, we can respect all Vaishnavas, but some Vaishnavas we may avoid. the Sahajiyas and others, okay, they're a type of Vaishnava because they kind of chant the holy name and they accept the Lord in some way, but they're not up to the proper standard of conduct, and either philosophically or theologically they may have problems in their understanding of who is God. But so we give a little respect, but we keep away from them because it's not good for our devotional advancement. Whereas other persons, we avoid completely, the asat people, like that. So there's borderline people that almost asat. And then we have devotees, and we have different levels of devotees also. So we have the kanishas, the madhyams, etc. So the respect there among Vaishnavas is even graded. And the higher the spiritual standing of the person, not regarding their birth, their body, or whatever, or caste, but just based on spiritual. That is how we respect the Vaishnavas, based on that. And we give the most respect to the most elevated spiritual Vaishnava. And to the less, we'll give less respect. We respect everybody. We'll speak of all living entities. So if accidentally, of course, another devotee may get upset with another devotee. So that's the type of aparad, because we shouldn't disturb any other living entity. We disturb the other living entity. But it may be unintentional. Of course, I mean, we can't help that, you know. Accidentally somebody got disturbed by some activity or something. Very difficult to control that. So as long as we're in the material world, we have that danger. Even if we're very elevated, then somebody may get upset with that devotee or whatever. As in the case of, what is that, Rupa Goswami and the lame man. The lame man who was also a Vaishnava. He got upset with Rupa Goswami for laughing, but it was accidental. It wasn't even intentionally for him or whatever, but he got upset. So that had effect on his bhajana, like that. So unavoidable in the material world. Nevertheless, if it's accidental, there's less effect than if it's intentional, and we do have some, you know, dvesha, as in this verse. Then that's a serious aparad. You haven't read Nectar of Devotion? Oh. Well, one, of course, is the Asat Sangha. Another is, you know, associating with Asat people. Another is reading Asat literature. Another is making big projects without any, you know, means of completing them or whatever, and getting distracted by that. Another is disrespect to the devatas. Another is disregarding other living, giving disrespect to other living entities. Another is tolerating offenses. When people commit offense against the Lord or other Vaishnavas, you should not tolerate and go away or whatever like that. Another is to be overcome by material emotions like sokha and lamentation and other things like that. Huh? So those are some of them, I think. And that's countered by the positive ones. Associate with devotees in the form of taking shelter of a guru, taking shiksha and diksha, respecting the gurus, shiksha or diksha gurus, following the parampara, etc., taking the teachings from the parampara, be willing to become, give up material things for the service of Krishna, respecting the asvada tree and the cow and the brahmana, etc., respecting other living entities, observing, be willing to fast on Ekadasis and other holidays, and give up our own material propensities for Krishna, etc., in that sense. So those are some of the positive ones. So we see that there is some idea about the same idea here, that, you know, we respect all the living entities also there, encoded actually in the 64 angas of bhakti also. And these are the door to bhakti. So if you start offending all sorts of living entities, you know, intentionally, then how can you advance in bhakti? You can't get into the door of bhakti. That's the door. And what's through the other door? What's through the door of bhakti? The other principles. Chanting the holy name, hearing, you know, observing festivals, all these things. The other 44 angas are the other things that we normally could think of as bhakti. These are the door to bhakti. So if we commit offenses against other living entities, then how we can practice bhakti properly? So therefore, Lord Chaitanya said, you know, you have to be humbler than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree. So that means, and give respect to other living entities, and don't expect respect for ourselves. Then you can chant constantly. But if you're committing offense against all living entities, including the Vaishnavas or whatever, then how we can chant? Not possible. Our service cannot be continuous. It's not aparad as such. Of course, they get offended maybe, so that's the aparad. But the intention is good, so then it's not serious in that way. But maybe a better tactic is to think very carefully how to best help the person. And maybe you're not the best person to advise them. If you're equals, they may not accept it. So maybe you have to have a superior person in authority to give them advice rather than that. And they may accept that instead. So Maybe it's better to tell the authority or another person that they'll listen to, and then there won't be any offense at all in that way. And it'll be beneficial for them as well. But in any case, the apparatus is not so serious because we're trying to act for their benefit. But of course, then we have the other side that maybe all the faults that I see in this other person are actually not faults, but something in my mind which is fault finding, and then so we have to be careful of that also. So that's why we should consult another person, then we can confirm if there are some problems with that other person or not.
How to change this endless nature into compassion, even though you understand that at theoretical level that there is no Mahatma in everyone, but how to consistently practice that nature?
Well, obviously, we cannot be perfect in this regard until we get to a very high level of bhakti and we're purified, because as long as we do have ahankara and desire, etc., we're going to have some sort of envy in one sense. Yeah? Yeah? In other words, we can say the envy is ultimately rooted in the ignorance, because we're rejecting the Supreme Lord and we're trying to enjoy the material world. That's a manifestation of our envy of the Lord and our desire to enjoy for ourselves, and constantly we have to hate other living entities to get our enjoyment. So that's very deeply rooted in ignorance itself. And ignorance is not completely destroyed until we get in later parts of bhava stage. So there'll be some trace there, but at least it's manageable within bhakti. We don't cultivate it as such, and we keep it under control at all times. The more we advance in bhakti, the more we annihilate the ignorance and the dvesha and all these things. So it's an automatic thing that results from the process of bhakti. But in the meantime, we have to keep it under control. And so whenever it seems to manifest, then we have to bring it under control again. Which may be difficult for some people because of their previous lives and experiences and so many karmas and all that, samskaras, impressions, etc. But it is possible through the process of bhakti. And we see the case of Murghari the hunter, that by the mercy of Narada Muni, he got completely transformed, and he gave up his violent activities completely and became ideal Vaishnava. And if we have association of good devotees, then it also helps out a lot. Oh, you have Krishna's pastimes. Shishupala. He killed him and he went to Vaikuntha. Putana got killed by him and ended up in the spiritual world. These are, of course, Kripa City. They don't deserve anything in one sense, but the Lord was very merciful for one reason or the other, and they went to the spiritual world. Huh? And Narada Muni, of course, is very compassionate to all his living entities as well, like the Murghari the hunter, who was killing all the animals and watching them die, etc. And then he became a devotee. In 3 months he got bhava. The mercy of Narada Muni, of course.